I'm Michael Heyman, and you're listening to a special Changemakers collaboration with the Travel Club for Hotel Lovers, Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Over the course of this series, we shine a light on some of the world's most innovative, luxurious, and sustainable hotels and the partnerships behind them. Joining me today are Michael and Sochi Birch, world-class entrepreneurs and founders of The Battery, described as simply San Francisco's best hotel by the Daily Telegraph and by Forbes as the city's coolest place to stay. Situated across the top three floors of its eponymous private members club, the 14-room hotel is designed to create a culture where inspiration is embraced, diverse communities come together, and egos are checked at the door. To tell us more, Michael and Sochi, welcome to Changemakers. I tell you, it's a particular pleasure for me to interview you today, not least because I've visited the club, I've stayed at the Battery, totally loved it. But I was thinking, how might I introduce the Battery? And I, do you know what? I'm not sure I've got the power of the words to describe it. So, Michael, I'm going to ask you to set the scene. Where are we? What's it all about?
The Battery is a private members club in San Francisco, analogous to many of the clubs one finds in London. We were the first, I'd say, contemporary private club in San Francisco. There's certainly going to be more. It's a 58,000 square foot building with hotel rooms, as you mentioned, restaurants, bars. I think we're going to be up to 9 bars soon. We have a gym and spa, outside garden, a penthouse with a roof deck and so on. So it's a beautiful space that we opened about 8 years ago. We were previously doing a social network, Bebo. We went from 40 million members on Bebo to 4,000 members in the club. So we, whereas everyone else was going in the other direction, we decided to downscale.
Well, you know something about members, obviously, through the Bebo experience. Maybe we'll come back to that. But Sochi, let's not lose the sense of the vibe, though. I mean, I suppose those are that's the kit. That's this wonderful expanse of space. Tell us what it feels like to be in the Battery.
Thank you. I appreciate that question. Because when we first opened the Battery, we really wanted it to be about the community and the members. I mean, I've actually never been a member of a private members club, and I definitely had a stereotype about what that would look like. And we want, even though it is a private members club, which usually you think exclusivity, we wanted the vibe to be inclusive. We wanted people to walk in the door and feel like they're at home and they've met people that they enjoy speaking to. So that's the vibe that we're aiming for. Sometimes it goes right, sometimes it doesn't. It's an ongoing project that will never end.
Well, it's really inventive, isn't it? I mean, I can remember being sat in the bar and, you know, there was a play that was going on in and amongst the sort of diners and drinkers. I mean, there's so much that goes on, but I suppose if I was to think about vital ingredients, it's beautifully designed. There is a absolutely incredible design ethos. There is something, as you say, about the community and the tech, I guess, in terms of it's got everything you could ever want. But there's something quirky, Michael, as well, in terms of the, if you think about the spirit of the place. I mean, is that a fair sort of reflection of what you've sought to create with this?
I think it is. Yeah, we didn't come from hospitality at all. And I'd never even worked in a coffee shop, let alone open a private members club.
What could possibly go wrong?
I know. We kind of went into this eyes wide open, knowing we knew nothing about what we were doing. But that was, for us, I think that was the appeal. We'd been doing tech for so long and honestly got a little bit bored of it. And we wanted to do something. We wanted to jump in at the deep end. And so we probably arrived at a different place than maybe we would have done had we come from hospitality or done private clubs or grown up in the industry, right? So we just kind of tried to create our version of what we thought would be great. And we, part of the impetus for doing it was we weren't really enjoying our social life in San Francisco. It's a great city, but we were going to restaurants with people we already knew. And the only new person you'd speak to would be the server. Right? Mm. And we weren't getting to know people. There's bars, but they're not great for meeting people. And it's a very random group. And we wanted this kind of more curated yet eclectic group of members so that we could just turn up on our own and stand at the bar and meet some interesting people and see some interesting things going on. Right. So that was always, it was much more around that experience than it was, you know, having great bar service and a nice restaurant. Mm. And also
beyond tech, right, in terms of the sort of people you're going to meet are a very diverse group of human beings that hang out there.
Yeah,
it was very important for us to have members from different industries, different backgrounds, different age groups. I think it just makes life a bit more interesting when you can speak to somebody that's not like you at all.
It's funny, when we first opened, like the first piece of press we got was like New Tech Club opens in San Francisco. And I'm like, we're not a tech club. We don't even like people from tech.
I'm sure hopefully that sort of survives the cutting, the editing room. But there's a wonderful phrase that you use about activating generosity, which is also a big part of, I guess, the heart and soul of the place. Tell us about that. Maybe Sage, would you like to tell us?
Yes, I'm happy to do that. So activating generosity is through our nonprofit at the Battery called Battery Powered. And it's a nonprofit, essentially a big giving circle. So all of our members contribute to a fund, and then we identify nonprofits around the community, and then we grant them money for projects that they're doing. Mm-hmm. So it's actually a really good way to meet other members, to talk about issues that are really important to you, as well as supporting the local community. So it's one of our favorite programs within the Battery.
I mean, you both have a phenomenal track record as philanthropists and having backed and supported a lot of people and a lot of ideas. In terms of how, I guess, you spread that message more actively through the club, I mean, has that turned out to be quite an interesting opportunity in terms of actually how you franchise the message about the difference you can make?
I think it has been.
Yes, I think it has been. But I just want to make an important point where Michael and I do individual philanthropy, but with Battery Powered, we didn't want it to be about us. We wanted it to be about the members. Mm. We wanted, you know, the members involved, and we wanted them, you know, to identify important issues that are important to them. And I suppose maybe that's the message that I think people should feel around philanthropy, is just finding your passion, and you can make a difference. It doesn't have to be a lot of money. It just has to be a lot of heart.
Each year we do three different themes we focus. The very first one was criminal justice. So we don't pick necessarily glossy themes. Like, they can be quite tough themes to
gritty.
Talk about sometimes.
Yeah.
Quite gritty. And then within that theme, we identify currently 12 organizations, and we typically give grants to about four or five of them. And the grant size is typically around $250,000. I think we've given a fair bit over $20 million in grants since we started the program. But as Soji mentioned, it's not about us having our passion nonprofits, which we certainly have, and telling everyone else they should support what we support. It's about them finding their passion. And the bigger hope is that they find something that they carry on with, right? That we give a grant through Battery Powered, so there's an instant reward for the nonprofit, as it were, for taking part, but that they then find these members who stick with them and join their board and go much deeper than we can.
And I think that was the, I guess, where I was getting to, which is that, you know, in the past you would join a club because it had got great facilities, it had got great features. Today, your club is also about a purpose. And, you know, there's a club in London called the Conduit Club, which I guess has got some of the same sort of ethos. But I mean, you know, you've been treading this ground for some time. And I suppose my question is more about, well, what ultimately that must create a fairly unique destination in terms of the people you're going to meet. And I'm thinking about the people who might be listening to this episode. I'm probably thinking, well, I'm going to go to the bar. Who are the sort of people I'm going to meet there when I say hello? Talk about some of your favorite guests, if you can share the stories.
Our favorite guests, we can't really.
The one that left early.
well, we never disclose who members are, so it's a difficult one to tell stories on, unfortunately. So we.
So there's discretion, Michael, in the battery. Good to know, I'm sure.
Yeah, so there are some great stories, and I just wish I could share them with you, but you don't.
Well, I suppose it's a good enough reason to visit. Now, you obviously, you know, you mentioned earlier on in the interview that neither of you sort of approached this as being, you know, heirs to the JW Marriott fortune or experienced hoteliers. I mean, you fundamentally approached this, I guess, as entrepreneurs, as people that knew how to build businesses. Tell us a little bit about how that maybe impacted the vision, and I guess the dynamic about how you two work together. Soji, I'm going to give you the first right of response.
I'm happy to start. So Michael is definitely the creative one. So he's, when you talk about the details in the club and the interior design, he's really involved in that part of it. I'm more operations, which was very difficult. I think if I would have had a little bit more knowledge around hospitality, I'm not sure I would have kind of been involved in the project.
Ignorance is bliss.
It is difficult. It is 24/7. Every meal is that one plate, and that matters on how it's delivered to the members. So it was tougher than we thought. The first couple of years were a struggle, but I hear from other people that that's quite normal when you're opening a new club or a new restaurant. And it was, I don't know how to explain it. It's probably like childbirth. You kind of forget about it.
I was going to say, obviously one theme of this interview is that you both know how to be discreet. But in terms of what you've learned about yourselves, Michael, what would you say? I mean, going through a process of building a completely different business, as you said, one minute you've got 4 million members, and I suppose that's a fairly anonymous group. Now you've got 4,000 members, and you know exactly a sense of who they are, where they come from, what they like. Have you had to adapt to make that change, do you think?
I mean, it's very different to a tech business. I find it a lot more enjoyable. I do enjoy tech, and we are still actually heavily involved in tech, as much as I may knock it. But it's that personal connection, and the much closer relationship you have to your customer is a lot more interesting, right? You can exchange emails with people on a social network, and sometimes you meet people, but it's much harder to build an online community in many ways than it is a real world community, right? Harder and easier in a way. Certainly easier to scale online. As soon as you get into the physical experiences, it's a much harder work to kind of keep that going and keeping it fresh, right? We are, as you mentioned earlier, we're constantly providing content as well as the community, right? There's probably about 2 member events per day in the Battery pre-COVID times.
Yeah, we're going to get on to COVID, don't worry.
But, there's constant programming. And we have a team of 206, I think, prior to COVID. It's probably down by about a third at the moment. But it's a lot of people, 40 different managers, 14 directors. It's in many ways a far more complicated business than running a social network was, even though it's a much smaller audience.
And Seji described you as the creative one. How would you describe Sage?
I mean, she described herself, I think, as more the opposite. She's the kind of rational voice of reason sometimes, I would say.
Yes.
I like to wave my hands a lot. Yes.
Michael waves his hands, and I say, well, why don't we start off doing this first? And then we'll get there.
She's talking me off most of the time.
The voice of competency. We're glad to hear that, I'm sure. Now, you mentioned COVID, and of course, nowhere has it been more commercially difficultly felt, I think, than a lot of frontline retail businesses, which of course hospitality is a huge part of. I mean, in terms of the experience and how you're emerging from it, what do you take out of that?
I mean, it's obviously been incredibly tough for hospitality. Private members clubs, I would say, we're part of a group of, I speak frequently with other owners of clubs, and I think as a sector, they've done better than most hospitality because there's membership dues, which by and large have carried on during the pandemic. I don't know how most restaurants or bars are still open at all at this point. I mean, it's been financially, it's still a difficult time for us, even with that side of it. And it's just been tough. It's a people business, right? You are very close to both members and staff, and a lot of people's lives been heavily impacted. And as much as we've tried to, keep as many staff on as we can and continue to provide healthcare through the pandemic, and there's only so much one can do. Thankfully, the government has, both in the US and the UK, done quite a lot to help the sector, but it's been very tough.
And I wonder actually whether, in your particular instance, Sage, is that, on the one hand, part of your day job is your technologist. And of course, technologists have tended to had a very different pandemic experience. Now, on the other hand, you're running this magnificent, hospitality venue where you're seeing the very, very real bricks and mortar challenges of running that business. I mean, does that provide a slightly different view, do you think, a perspective?
I think it does, because you just have such a close relationship with the staff and members, as Michael was saying. And we had our one of our first in-person events for Battery Power just last, I think it was a couple of nights ago. And I was talking to the staff I've been seeing a lot. So, you kind of see how their lives are being impacted. And, some people were very worried about going back. And talking to other members, the other night, you realize that some people are really going through emotional distress. You know, I would say it's almost like PTSD, you know, and they'll, you know, talk about the last year, and it's difficult. It's when you see it that up close, you realize how impacted everybody is. I mean, of course, everyone goes on with their daily lives and tries to cope, but sometimes it's more difficult than others.
So one of the absolute privileges of this show is that I've been traveling around the world from my PC to actually go to some extraordinary places. And I guess one of the common themes that has come up is this sense that travel will be different, that it might be more conscious, that the nature of the guest might be changing in terms of what people are actually looking for, in terms of what they do. I mean, is that something that you recognize? And I suppose, if so or if not, how that might impact your thoughts about the future of, I guess, the battery and the way that you might entertain guests and members for the shape of things to come?
I think it's hard to predict the long-term impact of the pandemic, right? We've clearly all adapted significantly during the pandemic. And I think there's going to be a hangover from it, right? I think the a lot of companies were scared to allow remote working at all, and now they've had to do it for literally every member of staff. So I think a lot of people, in terms of the way they work, are going to go back to more of a hybrid model rather than fully back to the office. I think the need to travel on business trips perhaps has changed forever, right? We've been forced to do Zoom calls and found out that maybe we're getting a lot more done doing this than spending our lives and sitting on planes and checking into hotels. But I also think there's this sort of a pent up demand and hunger now to travel again, right? You always want to do what you can't do, and we haven't been able to travel. So I'm fascinated to see, particularly in the 1 or 2 years after, what really happens.
Well, what happens? And I suppose the question, Soji, to you then is that movement with meaning? I mean, is there going to be something more conscious in the way we do these things, do you think?
I hope so. You know, as a traveler, you do want to connect with the place you're going to. Do you want to have to understand the vibe and the people? I mean, when Michael and I travel, we do like our bars. We usually end up at a local bar trying to talk to people that live there. And I think that gives you a real sense of what that city or country is like. So hopefully people will connect in that way.
I mean, I'm glad you mentioned bars because, of course, the last time I interviewed you, Michael, it was at the pub within the Battery, which I thought was a quintessentially British export that you had obviously both taken. I mean, we'll get on to your UK endeavours and elsewhere, but tell us how the pub goes down with the local San Franciscans. I mean, do they see it? They like it?
I wouldn't say what we have in the Battery. I wouldn't call it a pub. I'd call it a bar.
Sorry, apologies.
No, that's all right. We actually have a pub in our home, which is much more. We imported a pub from England, a closed down bar in England. We imported a bar and built an English pub in the home. With the Battery, we were very careful not to be overly thematic. We have the occasional nod to England and the Queen. I have a lovely painting of the Queen in the Battery. We didn't want to do the red telephone box and all this kind of things that are a little too maybe cheesy. But yeah, but pubs and bars have been part of our... We actually met in my college bar in South Kensington, Imperial College, many years ago. And so bars have always been a central theme to our lives, and we tend to put bars in any home we buy.
I'm almost sort of like quaking at the idea of bringing back the pub after that bad description of it. But I mean, you have gone to Devon, and you've got a brand new venture there, yes. which I guess a lot of our UK guests can experience whether they can fly or not right now. Tell us a little bit about said pub.
That is definitely a pub. We're not calling that one a bar. Remotely, not a bar at all. So the project in Devon is in a village called Wolfardisworthy, or for short known as Wolseley. It's a village that my ancestors have lived in since 1700. This project makes no rational sense from a business perspective at all. It's a total passion project. It's my grandmother was born in the village shop that her great-great-grandfather built. It's, you know, we have cousins still in the village that we're very close to. So it's... It's a total passion project, and it's fun, and it's a beautiful village. It's a beautiful part of Devon. It's on the near the North Devon
coast. Are you bringing any West Coast bars to the pub?
No, absolutely not. this project is 100% English, and it's not cliche English. It's just a lovely English village. So we bought this pub that was closed derelict for a while, and the owner was trying to get permission to turn it into a block of flats. And it's a 350-year-old thatch cottage pub So it started with that, and then it just snowballed. Then the fish and chip shop next door became available, and then the manor house across the street became available, and we bought that. We're turning that into a boutique hotel. We hired a 2 Michelin star chef for the pub, who will then eventually run the hotel across the street. We bought the corner shop that my great-great-grandfather built, and we're renovating that and putting his name back above the door as it was in an original photo we have. My cousin runs the farm. We've bought a bunch of farmland around, and so it's very much farm to table with regards to the food. So, yeah.
A wonderful story. I mean, I suppose this then brings us, you know, to the future journey, I guess, actually, because, you know, we're hearing there. I mean, I remember when I interviewed Michael, I came away thinking, right, that's a guy, he sold Bebo. I hadn't met you at the time. And I thought, right, he's got his side hustle with the battery, and that may well be, you know, happily ever after. But it feels and sounds, I mean, look, you're both back into tech. You've got the battery. You've got other plans, which I'm sure you'll tell us about in a moment. But it feels like it's full steam ahead, is it?
It is. It feels like we're addicted to hospitality at the moment. we also bought a building in Oakland, so we'll be expanding the battery, adding a location in the Bay Area. So,
and will that be different? Tell us about Oakland and why it's different to San Francisco, and actually what guests might, is it a club or will people be able to stay, I guess?
It's still early stages. And we, so it'll be another location, and we're just trying to expand around the Bay Area. So we'll be focusing on the East Bay, which does have a different community and vibe. And we're looking forward to having like an additional mix of members that can either visit the Oakland Club or come to San Francisco and vice versa.
I suppose in terms of what you both see yourselves as, this last question, in terms of, is this the technologist that does hospitality, or are you both now hospitality people that happen to be doing some pretty cool technology?
Well, the main focus on the tech side, perhaps not surprisingly, is hospitality technology.
Is this
Sonata? Yeah. And it's relatively stealth mode. So I'll tell you a little bit more about it. So prior to opening the battery, we went to license the software and thought we'd just go and get a nice shrink wrap piece of software that runs everything you do in a club. And then realized that the market for hospitality software, particularly for clubs, was really, really poor. And so we did the battery to get out of tech. And then about 9 months prior to opening the club, I was coding 50 hours a week, writing the code to run the club.
This is not going to plan.
And so I spent about 9 months coding a significant amount. And then so a lot of the software we used to run the club was software that we wrote ourselves. And then we've built a team out around that. And so the goal is to then provide software for other private clubs and hotels under the Sonata name. But more recently, we've been, as part of Sonata, we've set up something called Sonata Alliance, which is a network of independent private clubs. So it kind of competes with the Soho House, any house, I forget what they call their membership now, the membership where you can visit any Soho House. So they have about 30 locations at this point. And we have 30 independent clubs now. We expect that to go up to about 50 in 6 to 12 months' time. And so if you're a member of one of those clubs, you have an app on your phone. It's almost like the Uber for private clubs, right? So you're in a city, you pull it up, there's 2 clubs in that city. You can say, I want to go there tonight at 7 o'clock, and I'll get a table for 2. And then you rock up at the club and they're expecting you, and you can go in and have that kind of full member experience. So that's literally in the process of rolling out. Clubs are going live. Well, some clubs are live now. Most will go live in September with it.
So there we had the creative mind at work, so she's happily straddling the technology and hospitality world. Where do you see your passion now in terms of where it lies?
I'm definitely on the hospitality side, and I'm still heavily involved in a lot of philanthropy.
Well, I think that's a wonderfully succinct way of bringing our conversation to a close. Michael and Sochi Birch, thank you so much for sharing the story of the battery and so much more, and joining me for this episode of Changemakers with Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Changemakers with Mr. and Mrs. Smith. And you can find out more about the Smith Hotels collection at mrandmrssmith.com, where listeners to this podcast can enjoy a special £30 discount off any of these extraordinary hotels with the voucher code Changemakers. That's the voucher code Changemakers for £30 off any Smith Hotel. Thanks for joining us. Changemakers is brought to you by the campaigns firm Seven Hills and presented by me, Michael Heyman. Pure Being is the name of our soundtrack, and it's written and performed by the brilliant BT Wolf. To find out more, head over to changemakers.works. And if you like what you hear, why not give us a rating?